Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. The show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime by email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Martin Moran, Managing Director at InsideSales.com. I'm very interested about your kind of how you founded, your first company, and kind of the process involved with that. I think it's always a compelling thing for me. I've worked for startups, basically from my first ever job was actually with a startup to. Until very recently, I've always been involved in that space, but never as a founder, but always really compelled by people who, do take the leap of faith, if you like. And, I think just the fundamentals that came along with it and how it came about is something that I'm always quite interested in, as I suppose most people's stories are quite different. So, wondering how that came about, and obviously, I suppose as you put on your profile, the kind of new revolution in cloud computing, and what's going on in that space.
Okay. Well, I guess the first thing is that I think early in my career. I mean, interesting is I started my career really out and qualified as an accountant. So maybe not, an obvious place where I've ended up, but I was always interested in technology, and really the opportunity for me was has always been looking at two components really. One is sort of stuff that's interesting, technology that's different, that has the ability or potential to make a real impact. And secondly, it's working with people who are genuinely, I find genuinely interesting. Most of us work long and hard enough week in, week out that, if we're lucky enough to be with people who are inspiring and who are different and who have maybe a sort of slightly different take on the world, that makes just our own lives more, enriches our own lives and makes them more interesting. Mm. I mean, I really first got into the world of startup with Salesforce.com, and that goes back to, early 2000. At that stage, I was working for a very well-established technology company called Oracle.
Right, of course.
I'd established myself, and I'd established a pretty successful career there. But I saw in Salesforce something that was very, very different, and something that had the potential at that stage to bring a new, a new wave of technology to businesses and to all businesses of all shapes and sizes, and that the vehicle of that technology was essentially the internet. And you think back to 2000, we were seeing really the internet evolve. Specifically as a B2C value proposition, and so it wasn't any great revelation. I didn't suddenly wake up in the middle of the night and say have your eureka moment. But it was sort of looking at the potential of the internet and applications on the internet being applicable to business that got me really started. And then just an ongoing belief that that was going to be a big wave in the future. Now, you know, we're looking at 15, 17 years on, and people don't talk about the internet as being something that isn't applicable for business. You know, the question has now become, if you're in business, why are you not leveraging the internet for both your internal applications, but also how you engage with your wider customers, communities, and so on? So, you know, that was a combination of some technology that was really, really exciting, but also a leader of that organization, that business, in Mark Benioff, who was hugely charismatic. And, you know, I think it's fair to say he was thinking ahead of where the rest of the business world was. And that was, you know, sort of intoxicating, the sense that, you know, he was seeing the future before, you know, in very stark colors. And, you know, he then had the power, the energy, the drive to make it, to realize that future.
It's, that's entrepreneurism at its absolute finest, isn't it?
For sure,
totally. And innovation at its absolute finest. And I can't really come to terms half the time with the rate of change over the last couple of years, but you've kind of been there since 2000 or before 2000, and been involved in technology to some extent since that time. You know, to think innovatively then, you know, and to think innovatively now, is got to be sometimes just, I mean, incomprehensible when you look back and think, Jesus, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but it's sort of evolutionary, right? I mean, there have been a number of revolutions. You know, if you go through the history of computing, from, you know, the mainframe to the PC to the browser, and now really we're in the age of intelligence, well, yeah, you know, artificial intelligence, whether it be through, you know, machine learning, deep learning, cognitive computing. We've seen those revolutions, but within each of those revolutions, it's been a process of evolution. And you know what? I mean, I think it's only when you reflect that you recognize how much has changed, to exactly your point, Andy. But when you're in the eye of the storm, you don't necessarily see it because you're sort of living and breathing it every day.
Right.
And again, you know, I'll use my experience at Salesforce.com. If, you know, it is remarkable to think that in the year 2000, Salesforce.com was essentially an internet-based contact database. That's essentially what it was at its very beginnings, built with this explicit purpose of serving very small customers, very small companies. And over that 17, 18 years, it's evolved now to be used in a myriad of different ways, from marketing to service to, you know, sort of retail and the commercial cloud and everything else, for all types of companies, but, you know, some of the biggest companies on the planet. And that's been an evolution, but it's based on the premise that, you know, you cannot, you know, great businesses do not stand still.
Right.
Because great businesses understand one truism is that, and the truism is that, if you stand still, at some point you'll become disintermediated, and that you have to continually push boundaries. You have to continually stress the capabilities and if you like, the frame in which you operate. And if you continue to do that, what you'll do, what you'll have, is an organization that attracts people who are themselves entrepreneurs. Because entrepreneurs, by definition, are people who want to push boundaries, who want to go beyond what is the norm.
Yeah.
And so you create this self-perpetuating innovation. And I think, you know, Salesforce are a great example. I mean, there are lots of other companies today that are good examples, including the company I work for, InsideSales.com, where there's this sort of continual push on boundaries to see what's next. What is the next evolution? And maybe even what's the next revolution?
I agree. I think it's just a really good, I suppose, refreshing statement, you know, that, like, you know, the best businesses, they don't, you can't stand still. You can't just accept things. You have to be investing and be, you know, competitively curious. I always kind of talk on the show a little bit about, you know, external feedback and, you know, that just competitive curiosity that you need to have, like, as an individual. But, you know, obviously that can be built into the kind of fundamentals of the macro business.
Right.
But, you know, as an individual, you need to be kind of doing it from the micro level. And that is how it impacts things from the macro. So if you instill those behaviors in the people, and I do think that fundamentally it all starts with the people and the culture.
Yes.
And how people are built. Then that's where you get these, you know, fantastic businesses. It's no, you know, it's no secret, you know, that that's where it really comes from. You know, I'm sure your experiences, you know, with the Salesforce and probably even Oracle in the 90s and such were just really good kind of foundations for you to be in environments that kind of, you know, push for those behaviors.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Culture is such a core part of it. You know, and there's some of these, you know, old sayings, but they're old because, you know, they've generally lasted the test of time. You know, and there's things like, you know, not being afraid to fail.
Right.
You know, innovation, at the heart of innovation is generally failure. But it's also the ability to iterate, to test, to iterate again, and continually evolve. But you've got to have a certain culture of an organization that makes that okay and does not penalize that as a process. And then once you have that culture, then like-minded people will gravitate towards that culture because those are the people who thrive in that sort of innovative culture. Those are the people who see that as being additive to them and their careers and their aspirations. Because they can and they're happy to work in an environment that allows them to express themselves and allows them to try things and to test and to iterate.
Right. I think, exactly. It's an environment I think the top tech companies now have managed to create, as far as, you know, kind of the way that they allow people to have those creative times to just work on projects that, you know.
Yeah, and it's not about, you know, it's not about being altruistic or anything like that, because it is just damn right good business practice.
Right.
Because if it takes a company 5 years to develop a new innovative piece of technology, it takes the second company a fraction of that time to mimic, develop, or iterate that. And so, you know, as we've seen with technology, the development and innovation cycles become short, ever greater, much shorter. And so the competitive environment becomes that much more real, that much more quickly. And so it's in a company's own interest, you know, to continue to innovate. And you know, I think it's, you know, Wayne Gretzky, the ice hockey, you know, you skate to where the puck's going to be, not to where it's been.
Right.
And that's really, you know, what companies have to have as their lifeblood. They have to have moved before their competitors get to where they are now.
Yeah, I think so. And it's, again, it's just habit forming, isn't it, for people? It's being uncomfortable. It's being comfortable with kind of being uncomfortable, isn't it?
That's for sure, yeah.
I think, like you say, it's anti-human nature to be that way, but it's what's necessary to survive as, you know, a competitive person in a market, in a job marketplace, like the UK, you know, or any kind of major kind of global player.
And I think you hit a really, really incredibly important point. You know, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable is sort of super important.
Yeah.
Because it's often in times of discomfort that you have the greatest clarity of sort of thinking and purpose and action. But you're right, for a lot of people it's tough to have a mindset that says it's okay to be uncomfortable. It's okay every now and again to feel uncomfortable. Yeah, we as human beings, we generally don't like change, generally. But we've got to learn, the workplace, and this is not just in technology, you can see it's across the world. We've got to get used to the world changes at such a pace now that change is in and of itself a fundamental component of our working life.
Mm. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? And I think that it's one of those kind of things where when you kind of verbalize it to people, their initial reaction is like, well, yeah, of course. But when it comes to it, it's really about the kind of the execution and the action where you see so many times that people kind of fall short, right? And it's not for everyone, that kind of environment, right?
I was going to say, I mean, you know, human nature being what it is, you know, we fear what we don't understand. I mean, I know that's a very broad statement to make, but we generally fear what we don't understand. And when I think about organisations, then it's incumbent on the organisation to make sure that people understand why things are happening. And I go back and again, when I look back at my career, the number of people who have been very impactful and inspirational to me, and Mark Benioff was one of those. But one of Mark's absolute strengths is that as he built that organisation, he had absolute clarity in terms of the purpose of the organisation, the vision of the organisation, what the values of the organisation were, and how we were going to deliver on that vision. And he made sure everyone in the organisation understood that. So as changes were happening in real time, people could still understand the rationale for those changes. And so it was much easier for them to buy into that. And I think that's a really, really important part of when you're establishing an organization, if it's a startup, particularly that you start with that, you create that sort of that baseline, that foundation. And as you grow, and most startups, if they're successful, go really rapidly. As you grow really rapidly, those foundational things remain.
Yeah. Really interesting. I've heard that not too many times about vision and the importance of vision, but one of the actually, just to kind of give a prime example of exactly what you've just said, I did a podcast with a guy called Paige Craig, one of the earlier podcasts that I did, and Paige was actually an early investor in Twitter and Airbnb. So I assume he's done relatively well from those two investments, but he's now has a kind of a VC firm and such. And I was kind of asking him about, you know, when you look at investing in companies and like when you look at founders, like what is it that, you know, kind of makes you pull the trigger on people? And he was just like, it's really honestly pretty simple. He said, but it's about the vision. And exactly as you just said, it's whoever's got that kind of clarity of vision and that absolute vision, because that drives everything else, you know, from the marketing to the reason why you do things, from et cetera. It's like, so it's about that vision. And, you know, not everyone's a startup founder, but if you can kind of relate that to anything that you do, it's like, why are you joining that company? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing, like, everything needs to have like a vision behind it, from, you know, even if it's not kind of work related, there still needs to be intent behind what you're doing, and having that clarity, not being wishy-washy about
you're absolutely right, Andy. I mean, outside of work, I'm a rugby coach.
Right, okay.
And, I mean, coaching rugby for many, many years now, kids through to adults. And I found certain things to be true, and they're reflective of work as they're reflective in life. you know, if you've got to have structure, you've got to have a framework, you've got to have that vision, and you've got to be able to articulate that to people in a way that they can understand. Because you want people to buy into what you're trying to do, right, in the first place. But here's the thing. Yeah, when things are good, when the team's winning or, you know, numbers are good or whatever the context is, you know, it's fine. Everyone's happy. You know, it's when the times get tough that the lack of clarity of vision, of purpose and framework becomes a huge inhibitor to an organization. Because when things get tough, people want to know and understand how, what the path is back to success. Mm. And if you don't have that vision, you don't have that framework, it becomes really difficult to articulate that. So, you know, it's about having that framework to carry organizations through good times and also through not so good times.
I agree. I think we've, it's quite powerful. It's powerful stuff, but I think it's almost when you do start looking at things from that perspective, it makes things make sense in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people at work or whatever they're doing in life, they get lost in the midst of doing stuff, right? They're just doing. They're just constantly trying to do stuff, and then they kind of realize that what I've been doing for a while isn't, okay, it's not really been getting me anywhere. And then it's like, if you just bring it back to like, okay, what are we trying to achieve here? Okay, that's when I think it helps people a lot. And it's a really basic fundamental to kind of live by, but it's something that I consciously do as well, especially when we're working on projects and stuff, and you get caught up in the nuances of a project. I'll just be like, right, what's the actual black and white goal here?
Right.
And that really helps a lot. So, you know, I certainly would advise people to kind of think in those terms, you know, as much as possible. I think it really allows you to...
We're all super busy, right? We all have hundreds of things to do every day. And, you know, most of those hundreds of things we have to do every day are, by definition, relatively tactical.
Right.
And we can get lost in that. And you can lose the sight of, you know, as you say, what the objective, what the purpose is. So it's really important that you have some guiding principles that allows you to step back and say, well, why actually am I doing this? But it's also quite a good measure of how important it really is. You know, sometimes we lose sight of the fact that we end up doing things that really aren't necessarily particularly additive to the business or our personal life, but we do them because we get lost in the minutiae. So that idea of being able to step back. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the four disciplines of execution. It's a book and a process, which talks about, you know, you should establish for yourself wildly important goals, and those wildly important goals should govern what you do. And I think it's actually a good sort of discipline to have, whatever kind you have it.
I'll have to actually check that out. No, I'm not aware of it, but it's something that may be even good for my team actually as well to have a read up on something like that. I'm obviously conscious of time here and conscious of your voice as well. I don't want you to not be able to talk to the wife and kids later anyway. we would definitely wouldn't want that, of course.
They might find that a blessing, don't they?
You know, you've had, you know, a lot of successes, a lot of, I'm sure, up and downs throughout your career. You know, I think it's pretty obvious from the conversation about what it is that kind of keeps you motivated and engaged. And, you know, I assume technology is of interest to you. But outside of that, you know, what do you think that when you really look at things compels you and motivates you to, you know, continuously, I suppose, work hard and obviously don't just save the money, because of course it's more than that.
It's all about it. There are two things really, really excite me. You know, we talk about technology, but it's really about, what's equally important for me now is about the people and working with interesting people from, you know, different walks of life and different backgrounds. And I've been fortunate enough to work for some really good companies and work with lots of great people during my career. And I like the idea of now sort of using that to help other organisations. I'm always fascinated by, like we started at the beginning, Andy, I'm also fascinated by entrepreneurship and individuals and how they want to make a difference and what drives them and what motivates them. And, you know, seeing how I can help organisations, you know, achieve whatever their objective, whatever their vision is. And I guess, you know, I recently became a non-executive director of a company called Durham Lane, who are a UK company based out of Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, relatively traditional business, sort of, you know, consulting, recruiting, sort of sales outsourcing, but driven by the two founders have phenomenal passion. And, you know, I join them because of the guy's passion for what they're doing, for their business, and they're committed to you know, doing something that's going to be transformational. And I guess that's what excites me and interests me about working with companies. It's you know, working with individuals that have a real, you know, who are persistent, who are hardworking, who want to do the right thing and are just looking for ways to be successful. I guess that's what really sort of, you know, gets me excited.
Awesome, mate. Well, you know what, man, I've, you know, really enjoyed this conversation. So
likewise, Andy.
Thank you very much for taking the time, mate.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.